Welcome back to Tottenham Hotspur, available on all of your favorite podcast platforms. You can also interact with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and our Facebook page, along with our website and blog at Hotspur.com. There will be a link tree in this episode description with all of those links, so please follow the show, follow all the guys, and click subscribe to join the conversation and never miss Hotspur. Hey there, and thanks for joining. For context, we're recording this on Sunday, July 24th at 9 p.m. Eastern. We're still in the midst of the transfer window, so things change rapidly. It's a little late for us, so I've got my golden pajamas top on with Deli, who scored twice today. So I did feel the need I had to mention that, even though this is only the podcast audio version. But I'm your host, Matt, and you can follow me on Twitter at MKCoys. You can follow the show at Tottenham Pod. And I'm joined in the virtual Podspur studio by Scott and Dustin. This was another busy summer week in Tottenham as Spurs defeated the Rangers 2-1 in the Walter Tull Cup, earning Tottenham yet another preseason trophy. And we got to see a few debuts from new signings. Before I kick it to the guys, I do want to talk up our Podspur Nation WhatsApp group chat, which I mentioned last episode as well. So if you're a U.S.-based Spurs supporter and are interested in connecting with other stateside supporters, get in touch with us and we'll get you the link to join. So I fucked this one up last time and I said Scott was in Florida because he's a Seminoles fan, but he's in North Carolina. So Scott, how's the heat in North Carolina? How are you holding up with everything? I know you had a beach day today, right?
Yeah, I went to the beach, down to Atlantic Beach for the weekend. So that was great. It was nice. That's the one place where the heat doesn't bother you as much. So
what's the average daytime temp for you these last few days?
Oh, it's 92, 93, 94, but it was probably 85, 86 on the beach with the wind. So it wasn't bad.
Yeah, so you're touching probably 100 with the index on most days.
Easily. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. The humidity is absolutely brutal. And we also got Dustin from Bowling Green. Dustin, how are you holding up with all this heat?
Well, I'm doing really good right now. We've mentioned a few times on the show that my wife and I moved into our new house back in October, and we got a nice new fan in the office now, so I don't have to do the little air purifier that kind of works as a fan. So I'm doing good. But yeah, what was it? Like I told you, it's like Wednesday, our heat index was like 105. So I woke up at 8:15 this morning to mow. And at that point it was already 93 heat index. So it's been hot. I just checked it because off air, because Matt asked me, it's 88 currently in beautiful Bowling Green, Kentucky with, what's the heat index? I said like 97.
Yep.
So we're nice and sticky here, but we're staying cool in the house.
So my Podspur studio is in my basement, which is, it's a nice room, but I don't have a ceiling fan in here and I got to get like an oscillating thing. I'm already sweating. I can feel it dripping. So hopefully as you're listening to this, you're nice and air conditioned in your car on the way to work or wherever you're off to. But let's dive into the action as Spurs defeated the Rangers in Glasgow 2-1 to win the Walter Tull Cup to get the preseason trophy hunt kicked off. And I do believe we're up for another trophy versus Roma next weekend. Is that correct, Dustin?
The iTech Cup. Not to be confused with the brand of hockey equipment.
All right. So, I mean, Audi Cup, Walter Tull Cup, hopefully the iTech Cup, and the Spurs trophy case is filling up. I guess
AIA trophy from Singapore recently,
that's too. That's also true. I guess we can end the episode here. I mean, that's it. Boom. Season's done.
Serial winners. There
we go. We are serial winners here.
Put a bow on it.
But don't forget the Intertoto Cup back when I think Gary Lineker played.
There you go. We're filling up that case right now. I don't want to see any more empty trophy memes. But the starting 11 versus Rangers, Lloris in net, a back three of Romero, Dyer, and Sanchez, midfield four of Emerson Royal, Pierre-Emile Højbjerg, Rodrigo Bentancur, and Ryan Sessegnon, and the attacking three, Dejan Kulusevski, Harry Kane, Heung-min Son. I have to admit, Scott, when I first saw this one, I was like, this is really defensive. And in my head, I thought, like, you know, anytime a Premier League team plays a Scottish Premiership team, the Scottish team is going to throw their best punch at them. So I guess I kind of understood it from a Conte perspective of let's put Højbjerg and Bentancur out there together. And, you know, we'll really be able to fortify the middle of the field. But it wasn't the case early on, at least in my opinion, as I felt like Rangers weren't really pressing that hard, but we were just kind of giving it away as there was really no outlet to advance the ball. But what did you make of the 11 when you first saw it and how it kind of played out in the early stages of the match?
Well, I was okay with it. I really was hoping to see some of the new signings in there in the starting 11, but you understand it. Basuma with getting over COVID, and Spence was just signed, and Perisic has the injury, and so you kind of get it. I thought that it kind of highlighted the issues for us. The first few minutes, I thought we kind of controlled from the off, and then Rangers pretty quickly figured out, okay, so just like everybody else figured it out at the end of last season, just about if you pressure Kane right when he gets in the midfield, he can't turn around and kick it to Son. So then everything else gets kind of stifled. Kulusevski gets involved, drops deep, so that kind of allows us to progress the ball. But then everybody in the world knows if you just don't get anybody anywhere near Emerson, he's going to kick it somewhere not helpful. So, I mean, it was like the first half kind of highlighted everything that was wrong with Højbjerg to me, who is good. He's fine, but he's limited. And Emerson, who is also okay, I guess. But Højbjerg lost it numerous times. He had that 1v1 chance with McGregor, and it just doesn't even put it on target. Emerson had numerous opportunities with acres of space. Rangers didn't even come out to pressure him when he had the ball on the wing, and he did nothing with it. Like, I was watching the game, and I was like, okay, watch. Like, Emerson has it. Nobody's going to get near him. Nobody gets near him, and nothing happens.
Scott, let me stop you there for a second. Apologies for interrupting, but what frustrated the living daylight out of me watching that first half, so we have Emerson, we have Sessegnon, and the attack seemingly was forced up the right-hand side the entire match. Why weren't we looking to switch the pitch? Like, I don't understand that.
It's a really good question.
Or is this was this Conte saying, no, I want to see Emerson throwing crosses? But I just found it so frustrating that we know he can't cross the ball, but yet kept advancing the ball up the right side of the pitch.
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. First is Romero versus Sanchez. So your ball progression is going to go through Romero on the right way more often than it's going to go through Sanchez on the left. Now, Davey's been playing, good or point. Longley's been playing, you're probably going to see it more that way. I think another part of it, too, is Benson Kerr was playing on the right side of the midfield, whereas Højbjerg was on the left. So if you're Conte and you have Romero, Benson Kerr, Kulusevski, or Sanchez, Højbjerg, you're not going to get anything done on the end of it, but at least you'll get it there. I mean, I don't trust Sanchez and Højbjerg necessarily to pair up. It's like the old Bermuda Triangle of Aurier, Sanchez, and Sissoko. Like, I don't think that's going to get there. so I think that's probably wise just by that.
Yeah, very well said. Great points on that. Dustin, your thoughts on the 11 as well as, the start of the match?
I don't necessarily think it took till halftime for us to make the adjustments. I honestly thought we started to kind of turn on a little bit after their goal kind of woke up. I thought after they scored, we saw the gap in the talent between the teams really start to shape up. Like, immediately we switched on that gear. Yeah, Højbjerg missed the chance, but it was still a quality chance as a team. I thought, there's nothing wrong with starting 11. I was, once again, I saw Davis and Sanchez at left center back, and I think we all cringed. And I'll give him some credit. He played pretty well, actually. He played considerably better than in Korea. I'll say that. Comparatively speaking, way better than in Korea.
So, I knew that was going to be the first point of your of the lineup that you were going to go to. And I actually meant to lead in with that question for you.
Well, you guys, I feel like I don't know what the word is. I'm just probably a nice guy. That's it.
The problem with him, though, in that position is, and we all know it, is if he ends up playing there, we got issues during the season.
Oh, absolutely.
The problem is, best case scenario, he just doesn't fuck something up. Like, he's not doing anything good for you in progression or build up. Like, he's a fine defender, which is good, but you're not going to be a dominant ball control team and try to draw the other team onto you and create that faux counterattack, which Conte likes to do with Sanchez on the left. He could do it on the right because he's comfortable on his right foot.
And that was actually a valid point of the faux counterattack, because we were actually outpossessed 54-46% in this one, which when I read it, I was a little bit surprised by, but I knew it came from kind of the early on and before leading up to their first goal, at least. And I guess kind of talking about their first goal, Sanchez and Sessegnon both kind of on an island on that one. I think Sess is a little bit more at fault
you gotta stop that cross.
At least come out and put a little bit of pressure on that.
Yeah.
But Dustin, continue going on your lineup talk as well as talking about that goal.
I was on that goal. I wrote down, I have my, you know, my notes in front of me just so I could refer back to it. And what I wrote on there was poor marking on Rangers opening goal, too much standing and watching. I mean, I've slowed it down and I can't, I mean, Romero was around there. Dyer was around there. I don't necessarily.
Sanchez too.
Sanchez was around. Like, I'm saying, I'm not going to necessarily pick one person in particular who messed up, because, I mean, I feel like if you get scored on, the whole team pretty much pretty well messed up. There's nothing Lloris could have done on that because it was just wide open for a tap in. But overall, the lineup, you know, it was, you know, what I expected to see. Honestly, you take, if Ben Davies is healthy, or even a Clement Lenglet, once he kind of gets kind of the system under his foot, probably swap out Sanchez for Ben Davies or Clement Lenglet. And that could be – I mean, I could see it starting that in a Premier League match. I don't know. Now, who? I don't know. But, I mean, I could see that as a Premier League starting lineup for that. Or I mean, I could see us play that lineup.
I'd struggle with that one as a starting lineup unless it's versus I guess a City or a Liverpool. For me, that lineup is kind of our – that's kind of our low block lineup, having Bentancur and Højbjerg in there. That's our defensive first minded.
Maybe I'm just so accustomed to it because that's what we had last year.
No, that's a great shout. And you know, like you mentioned with the standing around on the goal, like that's what we've grown accustomed to with so many of these defenders.
Yeah, I could see that be a 75th minute. We go up 2-1 at Anfield and Conte says, let's hold it and let's make sure we don't give away the equalizer.
Yeah. So talking about Cesc on that goal, and I definitely put him maybe as public enemy number one as far as the, you know, it who it falls on. But we did have a question on Twitter from Els at 8Ryan9. We'll kick this one over to you, Scotty. Opinions on Cesc and Jan. I genuinely believe he'll be sold by the end of next season. No end product, awful at 1v1s, doesn't get his head up enough. I just don't think he'll cut it. And I'm not going to comment on this one because I see the look you're giving me. This is a look that I think only a mother could love for you podcast listeners. But interested to get your take, and then I'll definitely sound off with mine.
I don't know. That's a surprising one. I mean, everybody has a right to their opinion. I think that he's going to be very good for us personally. I think he'll probably sign a new contract and be here for quite some time. I mean, you got to remember the homegrown aspect of this, homegrown, association trained, all those things, Champions League, Premier League, how important that is. And just you take that part out of it, he's a very good defender. I mean, I think he's nearly as good of a defender as Emerson is. Without the limitations in attack that Emerson has. Now we've had issues with him with his injuries, and I think his injuries have kind of stifled his willingness to be aggressive in attack. Because when you have your hamstrings go, you know, you're constantly thinking about that. So if he can get a run of games and not worry about that, and be explosive without being worried about being explosive, I think we'll see more of that. But I think he does a pretty good job creating space for himself, getting balls in the box. I mean, it was against Sevilla, he whipped that cross in that either with Charleston or Son could have scored.
Yeah,
right. Son headed it, but it definitely could have fell to Richarlison.
And I know it was the championship, but he scored buckets of goals for Fulham, and his finishing is I don't know. I just feel like he's of all the problems, he's
right. I have to admit, and I'm going to be a little less nice than you on this one. This question bothered me. I'm a huge Ryan Sessegnon fan. For the England U21 setup, he's always performed absolutely brilliantly. I think the best compliment I've heard about Ryan Sessegnon was actually from Jose. Jose said that this is Ashley Cole. This player could be Ashley Cole. And I think that's a great comparison. I think, you know, you mentioned the defending in relationship to Emerson. I think that overall, Ryan Sessegnon is head and shoulders a better player than Emerson now.
Oh, better player. I was just strictly defensive.
No. I'm just saying.
A good defender.
Overall, Ryan Sessegnon just brings so much to the pitch. You mentioned the homegrown piece. I feel like out of all the players to pick on, to try to pick on Ryan Sessegnon, you know, although, you know, at fault for the goal, and I get that stick can go up people's asses, you know, with it being fresh in their memory. But I love Cess. I agree with you, Scott. I could very well see him signing a new contract and see him playing in a Spurs shirt for a long, long time to come. How about you, Dustin?
I mean, we also love Christian Romero on this podcast, and I'll tell you this. He had some fault in that goal as well, because, like I said, he stood and watched. So, I mean, he's, like I said, everyone has their moments where they're going to be at fault for that. And there's nothing, I mean, that's him being professional, will say, yeah, that was my bad. I could have done something better. Let's move on. Thankfully, it was just a friendly.
Yeah, sure.
So I think that's harsh to come at him like that. I really want to make a joke about ball knowledge right there. But
well, now let me say, this is not like a one-off opinion. I've seen quite a bit of this.
It's true.
Media, yeah. So I don't.
Yeah.
This almost reminds me, and sorry to cut you off there, Scott. This almost reminds me of like of the Harry Winks talk. And I'm always going to bring up Winks, but like, I don't understand with some members of our fan base the need or necessity or the feel to, you know, criticize English players.
Is there a, and I know Sessegnon's not a home, like obviously he came from Fulham, we bought him a few summers ago. Do you think it's maybe those younger players who we seem to be like, they're going to be the player for the future. They're going to be the poster child. They're going to be the next, you know, Ledley King, Harry Kane type. Do we put an unnecessarily high standard on them?
I mean, it's interesting with Cess because, you know, you look at it, Jose brought Sergio Reguilón in and Cess was loaned out and he struggled at
Hoffenheim.
Hoffenheim. I was going to say Hamburg, but Hoffenheim. Yeah. He struggled for minutes there. We'll cover the whole Bundesliga.
The blue German team. He played for that blue German team.
But he struggled for time with them. That was also a very poor side. And seemingly it was like Jose gave him that great compliment early on about being Ashley Cole and then went and bought a player to kind of replace him. So I think it was just kind of getting the nod and getting the confidence. And Antonio Conte has showed a lot of confidence in Ryan Sessegnon, has featured him quite a bit in his tenure as Spurs manager. And
he also said that he thought he had very big potential in that position as well. I mean, said that.
I think he is the prototypical Conte wingback. I think the piece.
I think that the issue is patience with this fan base and well, most fan bases, especially the social media side of it. Because how old is he now? 21?
22.
Yeah. 22. And so he's been on the scene for 5 years though. So people expect this like, you know, protege type of performance, like it, progression is not linear, you know, especially in player development. And you see him doing X, Y, and Z at 17, and he's only doing these things at 22. Well, he's had injuries. He's had an adaptation to the Premier League, excuse me. He's had a loan. He got injured on the loan. So
people we actually bought him in 2019. So he's actually only been here 3 seasons.
When he was loaned out for one of them, injured for another.
Right.
He's had as many head coaches, more head coaches than he's had seasons at the club. Right.
Yeah, that's a perfect shout.
All wildly different systems, and he's not really a fullback. So I think it's a patience thing, especially from a fan base that has ballooned in the last 8 years, right? There's not a lot of pain and agony that some of us have gone through. So it's this, it's a lack of patience, and he's not a, you know, bomb down the wing at 100 miles an hour type of fullback that like people want to see. So I could see it. I think this season it'll change a lot of opinions.
Yeah. Scott, let me come in. I wonder if the patience too is if we bought him 3 seasons ago, he'd have been 19. What did we buy him for? Like 20 to 25 million?
25.
Like, I think, you know, had he, you know, or had it been a lower price tag, I think the fact he put 25 million at 19 years old is a pretty good price tag right there. So I think that, you know, there's that expectation that he was going to come right in and be the man, which if we remember the first year he played in the Premier League with Fulham, that Fulham team was bad.
He was also playing more wing than really fullback.
And I was going to come to that. Like he didn't play left wing back. He played more left wing and it took him some adjustment. He was not the same. Like I remember they talked about it a lot. It's like, oh, he's been a disappointment. It's like, well, he's 18. Like it's like when a player comes in Major League Baseball, a phenomenon comes in at 19 and doesn't hit 3 home runs a game. Everyone's like, oh, he's not the same player we thought he was. he's we don't it takes a lot. I'm thinking of Ted Lasso. Probably have chips for dinner and a wank before bed, stuff like that. we don't know what goes on their head because we think about 19-year-old professional athletes. Like, he's gonna need some time, and injuries hurt that, playing out of position hurt that, playing in different countries hurt that. So I think we're starting to see, and I wrote this summer in my summer series about, you know, the top players, and I had Sessegnon in my honorable mention. We finally are starting to see the Ryan Sessegnon we thought we were going to have when we bought him. And it's just taken some time to get there. And I think this year, you know, as long as he stays healthy, I think we'll continue to see that.
That's the caveat. This has to be the season he plays, you know, 25, 30 games. Like, we can't keep doing this. So Conte and his medical staff are good, right? Like, they've identified, and he talked about it in an interview with, I think it may have been Alistair Gold, you know, the strengthening the muscles around the hamstring to support the hamstring to get the kinetic chain right. Like, but this, if he's injured for most of the season again, I'm done. Like, I know he's good and he's got all this potential in the world, but potential doesn't work 11 games out of the season. It just doesn't.
That's true.
No, so he's got to stay healthy. And if he stays healthy, he'll perform. There's no question of that.
And he's got someone there in Ivan Perisic, who we'll come to in a little bit when we talk about his cameo, who will push him. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to play the Conte system.
And who better to learn from, as you know,
oh my gosh,
Perisic being primarily a winger to start out his career and then switching back to wing back under Antonio Conte. So well, I think that's also quite a mentor.
33 playing 5,000 minutes. He knows how to take care of soft tissues, you know, like,
yeah, right. Not to mention
what that guy does.
And he's, Perisic is going to play a lot of minutes. Croatia in the World Cup, I assume they are, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So he's going to play a lot of minutes, you know, halfway through the season as well, too. So, you know, I think that does bode Sessegnon a lot more time. And I didn't want this to turn into like a huge like Sessegnon batch session, which I don't think we did at all. But like that question kind of, it run me the wrong way because, you know, I think Scott kind of mentioned it in his initial response there of like, you know, out of all the problems, we're going to pick on Sessegnon. And that's kind of how I felt. I read this and I was like,
really?
I read the first line of it and I was like, yeah, I love talking about Ryan Sessegnon. And then I read the second line and was like, whoa, I was a little shifted by this.
I'm watching the game, rewatching it on my phone, like I have it on the background, and I continue to see Royale get treated like he's got COVID and nobody else on the pitch does. Like, nobody's getting near him. Like, the fact that we're even talking about this is pissing me off. Like, the more we get into it, like, Royale's 23.
Right,
he's a year older than Sessegnon.
He's Brazilian, so that's flashy. The people love it, right?
Yeah, right.
So let's talk positives. Harry Kane, 2 goals, 50th minute, 56th minute.
Chef's kiss.
First, an absolute. I think that, you know, left side of the net and then put it across the face of goal into that top right corner is peak vintage Harry Kane. I think that as soon as he kind of shifts that ball to his right foot, you know what's going to happen there. You know what to expect there. And the other goal, the sun touch and pass. And
oh, beautiful.
I think just like instinctual finding of Harry Kane on that was absolutely beautiful. I've mentioned on air, I have a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. And my 4-year-old watches every Spurs game with me because he loves Sonny. And he was like, wow, what a pass by Sonny. Like, even he recognized it. So, like, you know, definitely wanted to make sure his son didn't get, you know, undersold for that assist. That was just playing with a man, knowing where he's going to be. And then, you know, the Harry Kane finish. Dustin, you said it. Chef's kiss. Go ahead.
Chef's kiss.
Take us through these finishes.
You know, he scored the first goal he scored in the 50th minute, he shifted that ball. As soon as he got that ball in the top right corner, I'm like, this reminds me of this position he was in this when he scored against Leicester at Wembley on the final day in 2017-18. And then he shifted it. I'm like, oh, yeah, he did that against Barcelona, too, in the Champions League that year at Wembley. Or, I'm sorry, the next year at Wembley. And then he scored. I'm like, I never doubted it. Like, as soon as he got that ball in that position and that guy started backing up, I was like, goal. Here we go. I mean, he's just so, like I said, I mentioned two right there. He actually had another. He had a goal at the new stadium and again in lockdown against Leicester from the same spot. If Harry Kane gets the ball in the top right corner of the box, he's going to curl it into the opposite corner and it's going to be beautiful. And I don't even know. Like, I think I sent it to our group chat. I was like, I never doubted it. As soon as the shot went, I was like,
it was going to happen.
Yeah, like he just it was vintage. Like, to steal a WWE Michael Cole, it was vintage.
Scott, what do you?
I loved it.
Scott, what do you make of Kane's early season form? He seems to be firing on all cylinders now. It is the preseason, you know, worth mentioning. Kane is notoriously slow with his starts, and I do want to give a shout out to my good friend Andrew George at Andrew_G1384 on Twitter, who said, you know, he commented on someone's mentioning Kane's form in the preseason and said, but can he do it on at Plovdiv on a Wednesday night? Although that was just that was just a great tweet. Andrew's got the greatest touch of sarcasm. But in all seriousness, what do you make of Kane in his, you know, clinical finishing so far this preseason?
Well, I actually didn't have that thought that you guys did, that was going to be a goal. Like, there was no space. Like, I know he can do it. You know,
score. That's his window when there's
How he generated the space to get that shot off. Like, he's not fast or like quick twitch, but he's just so, I don't know. Like, he's just Harry Kane, right? Like, there was no space. he generated it, and he just was like, I'm going to put it right there.
He just knows how to generate that space. Like, when I thought about that, I had flashbacks to when I played hockey growing up, and I would watch Sergei Fedorov play for the Detroit Red Wings. He would have a man on him, and he would do this move where he would slide the puck over the guy's stick, put his stick over the guy's stick, and shoot all in one motion. And he scored so many goals like that. It's like, I can't do that. But, you know, the best players in the world just – know how to create that space and all that timing to create it.
That's what I was about to say. The elitist of the elite athletes are special with space, like finding space, generating space, exploiting space, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, when it comes to his form, didn't he score another goal that was off, like just offside in this match? Yeah. Or was that?
Yep.
And that was a hell of a finish. Like that was a great finish. Like I don't remember seeing him look this good in the preseason, and I've wondered, like, is this the year he starts off in August, like just bangs a bunch of goals in? Like, if that happens,
was 18-19 the only year he really had a big August?
I think that was his best one of recent memory, or
I know
his actual Premier League career.
That was one of his best ones from a start. No, I take it back. 19-20, he scored two on opening day against Aston Villa. He had a pretty good numbers. 18-19 and 19-20, he started, but every other time he's scored, it's like he scored 17 goals last year, and 16 of them came in the final 24 matches of the year. So
I think he could score 30 this season. This is what he's gonna
no
do.
Doubt.
I think back, and I was talking with my fellow Rhode Island Spurs chairs, Jeff and Ben, earlier today about Jeff is a hot shit. He actually just watched All or Nothing for the first time, and he said, first off, fuck the Skywalk. I'm never doing that. he said, I just got dizzy watching that. So I know Jeff listens to the pod, so, you know, appreciate all that. But then he also said, we look at that and how much, you know, I think that Kane could really get off to the explosion that Jose said, you know, you will see with me. I lost my train of thought there, but
explosion.
I rebounded with it.
You know that Conte wants nothing more than Kane to score more goals for him than he did.
Exactly.
Jose.
Oh, 100%.
And then you know, at the end of the season, he'll make a comment in a press conference about Kane exploding for him, like just to rub it in Jose's
face. I think if Kane bags four against Roma next week, then we could be in for one of the best presses of Antonio Conte. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought on where I was linking that to the documentary, because I just pictured Jeff throwing up on the Skywalk. But I really think that with Conte, Kane can explode. I think it has so much to do with how much Sonny has grown under Conte. And you know, Sonny's been world-class for two or three seasons now. But I think we're seeing the best of Son under any manager that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I think that that's just going to lead to so much. I think that, you know, Kulusevski helps that. Richarlison helps that. If a certain player from Leicester comes in, it could only help that going forward. So
don't worry, we'll come to that later.
We will. I just love the attacking, you know, prowess that we've grown into. Go ahead, Scott.
One thing I remember from watching the match. Now, I got frustrated, not with Kane, because Kane drops deep early in the match to help him build up, and then he whips the ball out to Sessegnon, and Sessegnon has it spaced across, and he crosses it. There's nobody in the box, because Kane just played the ball to him. Now, that is not Kane's fault. Kane had to do that because that was where the space was. Bentancur and Højbjerg weren't there to do it. So,
and it was a well-placed cross too. Like, if there was someone there, it would have been a great cross.
If Kane was where Kane should have been, and the midfield had been participating in build up the way they should have been. And it's not just the midfield. Like I said, it's Emerson, Højbjerg, Bentancur all together with Sanchez, their inability to link up the play. like Kane, if once we get the right 11, including the wingbacks, Kane's going to score more goals because he's not going to have to drop deep and participate right. in the buildup. Like if that could have been Perisic or Bissouma playing it to Perisic, crossing it to Kane, that would have been a goal because there was space in the box. So it's stuff like it's not just scoring chances that he's getting, it's chances he's not even getting because he's where he has to be on the field.
Right.
And I think that's going to make a huge difference for him.
That's very well said. We gave Kane a lot of praise here. Let's go to some Kane negativity.
Yes.
From lifelong Podsburg supporter Austin Bazan. You can follow him on Twitter at ATXBazan. If you'd like, I guess. You know, he's that guy.
He's worth a follow.
Yeah. So Austin asks us, what does Kane have on Conte that is allowing him to keep taking free kicks? Harry Kane is a god. It is Achilles' heel, his free kicks, unfortunately. Love you, HK, though. I don't know if it's
I don't know about this one. I got to be honest, because I thought that free kick he took was okay.
Hold on. I'm just going to before I let you dive in there. I don't know if it's Conte has shit on him or does Gianni Vio have shit on him. But you thought that free kick was okay. I thought he was aiming for Dyer's head, or was he was he aiming for a tight space like we talked about with these elite players finding tight spaces?
Yes.
But Dyer's big ass blockhead got in the way.
So I know you're joking, but go back to the one he scored against the K League.
Right.
I'm kind of extrapolating from a small sample set here. Ooh, but
good word.
But what he did there is he. And Vio likes to do this. He likes to play games with our players being in the wall to unsight the keeper. So against K-League, Kane did the same thing. We had two players. I think it was two players at the end of their wall. And they bailed at the last minute. And he just thunder-bastarded it right into the goal. Now, it took a deflection. But now the problem here is Dyer.
Wait, hold on. Thunderbastard.
That's the same thing. I was like, that's a awesome hell of a word.
So, but he did the same thing here, but Dyer leaned into it. Like if Dyer had cleared the space like they did against K-League, then there's nobody between the ball and the goal. Of course, it hit his fucking blockhead, like you said. But it almost knocked him unconscious. But if he had – just watch it again. If he goes the other way or doesn't lean into it – and you could see Kane was pissed going into halftime. Because right. like that looked orchestrated to me. Like I think he might be okay, and that might just be the strategy. Like just hit the shit out of this thing, and our players will get out of the way, and we'll see if the keeper can get there. That's what it looked like to me.
We're running the old picket fence, you know. It's exactly what it is. Hold on, before I go to you on this one, Dustin, because I butchered the repronunciation of it. Thunder Bastard, is that what you said?
Thunder Bastard, yeah.
Thunder Bastard, I love that.
I think that should be Scott's nickname on the show.
That's trademark. Scott just thunder bastard this podcast. Dustin, your thoughts on Harry Kane still on free kick duty?
Well, I just had an epiphany. I think it's Dyer's fault because him and Portnoy had probably eaten too much margarita pizza together the night before.
Yeah, but it's only one bite.
It's only one bite. No, did you watch the video? Eric Dyer ate that whole damn slice.
Yep.
Which I don't blame him.
Well, Portnoy doesn't. Portnoy actually came to a pizza place, my go-to, you know, that maybe like 10 minutes from my house. So.
Also, I'm also waiting on El Presidente to respond to my invitation to join us on Podspurs. So we got to keep hyping that up. Maybe I'll do something good for us. Either that or get a Suburban sponsor, one of the two.
I saw that you tweeted to him, and I sent before you had done that, I sent a DM on their Instagram. So.
Maybe we just we'll just flood their inbox. The pilots say, "Okay, we'll come."
I was actually I was on the front page of Barstool back in probably like 2011. I had a "Don't worry, be Manny" t-shirt on that I bought from Barstool at a Red Sox game, and it was a smiley face with dread smoking a joint, and I made the front page of Barstool for that. So
that's awesome. My other thought on that was my first thought when I saw Harry Kane hit the wall was, if this was a drinking game, we'd all take two shots right now. So I'm also going to be working on a Podsker drinking game. So when we have this, we can get on the show afterwards and talk about what our bingo board looked like and what we all had to do. So I'll work on that. But Harry Kane hitting the wall on a free kick will definitely be on there for two shots.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the other big kind of talking point from this one was the fact that we actually played 22 players, which was pretty cool. We were able to, you know, field the starting 11 and then sub out every single player, including Fraser Foster for Hugo Lloris, and that was awesome to see because Foster had played for Celtic on loan, so he got a lively welcome from the Ibrox faithful, which I always love to see because I fucking hate the Rangers. But we saw players come in from. I'll read off this next 11 just be easier. So I mentioned Foster, Lucas Moura, Yves Bissouma, Richarlison, Ivan Perisic, Joe Rodon came on very early for Davinson Sanchez there, Jed Spence, Clement Lenglet, and Brian Heal, Jaffa Tanganga, and Pape Matar Sarr. So I guess the biggest question going forward from this, I'll call it second 11 because I think the first 11 was probably a little bit closer to what our starting lines will look like. But were there any standout performances or any big negatives you had there, Scott?
No, I thought it was good to see everybody come in. And it was interesting to me is that of all the players that played in the right wing back spot, none of them were Matt Doherty. Maybe Conte knows what he's got there. I mean, he's seen the lows and the highs of him in that position by now. I thought that was strange that Lucas got the chance and Doherty didn't. Maybe he's really trying to develop Lucas in that position, which indicates probably to me that one of the others is going to go. I mean, he's really forcing this thing now. I mean, this is the second time that he's played there and the first time at the expense of someone else. So this is clearly intentional. I don't think this is one of those like sending a message to Doherty to get his shit together. Like, I don't think that's what it is, but it doesn't mean nothing, right? Like it's clearly Lucas is being trained there for a reason. So I thought that was interesting, but you know, I thought that Perisic was good and he didn't have a huge impact, you know, like crossing and whipping balls in and things like that. But you could see that he understood the system very well. I mean, he was kind of directing traffic quite a bit.
His communication, like, thoroughly impressed me. Yeah. It was nonstop. It was like having a coach out there on the pitch.
Right, right. And, you know, Bissouma. I thought he was good. He didn't look timid. I don't want to say timid, but he didn't express himself quite like you know he can.
He didn't look like good. The fitness was fully there.
Well, it makes sense. It makes sense. And then Spence came on. I thought that was fun. I mean, his first involvement was impressive. I thought getting back on that, I think it was a counterattack and kind of a last ditch tackle to get the ball clean and recover it. That was impressive to show his pace. No one else in that position on the team could have done that. And I'm so excited for Spence, but yeah. And I thought that, that Spence looked good and yeah, I mean, it was exciting to see the depth we have. If you think about the last game of the season, I think we named 5 academy players to the bench, and every player on the bench today was a senior player. So
it's a great show.
I mean, that's everything you need to hear. You talk about Conte wanting 16, 17, 18 players that are interchangeable, so you don't have the level drop off. You have Richarlison start on the right wing, Moura isn't right wing back. Make a couple of changes, then all of a sudden, you know, Moore goes to left wing, Richarlison goes to the center. Like the interchangeability of these players with making one substitution, we change 3 different positions. Like, what do you do as an opposing coach when it's just the flexibility is incredible. So
and 5 subs.
Right. Right. I'm very excited by all of that.
I actually think that the 11 that finished the game could probably win a Premier League game. Versus a Fulham, versus a Nottingham Forest, versus a bottom of the table side. I think that obviously Richarlison up front, I think the talent is, you know, more than there to actually win a Premier League game. So I was very impressed with the depth as well. You mentioned Spence coming on and that clearance he had. I believe it was
immediately.
Romero was working his ass off to hold off a defender and the ball got away and Spence just casually stepped in. And got rid of it.
Shot out of a cannon.
I was very impressed with that. We talked about Perisic and his communication.
You know, he did whip a ball in for Richarlison that he nearly found a corner with his head.
It went just over the bar.
I also thought I really liked what I saw from Clement Lenglet. I think he very much has the mindset: if you get by him or beat him, fuck you. I'm following you and taking you to the ground. I think he had like 3 or 4 falls in like, you know, 20 minutes or whatever he ended up getting.
He had a nice block in the 74th minute too. Like one of his first actions, he had a really nice block.
Only I think played... he just doesn't want to be noticed. Like that's where he's at right now in his career.
You mentioned with Sanchez and not making like the big mistake, and Clement Lenglet is not going to make the big mistake because he's going to follow you outside the box and just allow his team to reset and regroup, which I'm okay with. I like that. I like that mentality.
Matt, you know what that shows me? He's got two things, smarts and intelligence.
That's it. He's an intelligent kind of guy. It was only he came out in the 82nd, but I do think Pape Matar-Sarr is he's a player. I would love to see him stay this season. I know we talked a little bit about that on the last pod, but he's very tidy. He's very composed.
We can talk about it again on this one.
I'm sure. I like him a lot. I think he can only help the squad, and you know, maybe with a few outgoings, he does end up staying. I think that those were all very big positives. As far as you know, negatives, and I don't really necessarily mean this as a negative. I really wanted to see something from Brian Hill, and you know, 20 minutes against the Scottish side, I think we should have seen something. He got on the ball a few times, but wasn't really able to create much.
He had a nice in the 78th minute. He had a nice corner ball that the Perisic did the acrobatic kind of over the head attempt at. It was a nice ball.
Yeah, he did. I mean, but I actually would have thought he would be able to carve up a Scottish defense and get in there for an assist or a goal. But you know. It is what it is. I'm still a Brian Hill fan, but I guess I was kind of expecting a little bit more out of him.
Has he ever scared the goal even for us? I mean, it's like every time he gets a chance, he like literally trips on the ball. He's good. I think it's a moment and composure type thing. But
he did one time against Wolves in the Carabao Cup. He did score a penalty, so we'll count that.
There it is. All right, Dustin, any standout or negative performances from you from that second 11?
We've hit the nail on the head. My biggest thought was in the 81st minute, I said, dear Lord, what is with Joe Roden's facial hair?
I was about to say, I know I'm the bald guy. The facial hair didn't bother me. What the fuck is going on in his head?
Did anyone else think he kind of looked...
I'm bald, so there it takes a lot for me to go there. But that something is growing on top of his head that's got its own heartbeat. Like, I don't know what that is, but... it's uncomfortable for me. Like,
homeboy
is fine.
Channeling some James Madison there with that part.
Yeah. Yeah, right. You can't.
Homeboy is a neck tat and some nasty ass earrings away from looking like Machine Gun Kelly. I'm just saying.
He might actually have that neck tat. He does believe that aliens exist, though.
Wait a second. I'm sorry. I missed this live. Like I said, I got the game on my phone as we record. Did you guys see the back heel pass from Davinson Sanchez?
Oh, yeah. That was sick nasty.
I missed that the first time.
It looked like he meant to do that.
He did. No, he did. I just watched the replay. He backheels a through ball to Sessegnon in the box.
Sess had a nice shot, too. Like, it was actually a quality save.
Holy shit. Maybe I should take some of that stuff back.
Number one donkey.
You didn't say anything that was false. We just didn't mention that backheel pass. Matt, I want to come on to something you said about Sarr. He came in the 82nd minute, and I think he deserves a nice little slow clap because he was named the CAF Young Player of the Year in Africa, which is a big deal. Like, he's 19 and he plays for Spurs. I mean, that makes me feel pretty good to see him win that award. But you know, in stoppage time, he had a really good challenge to spring a counterattack, and I was like, okay, I like he had a nice interception, and then he immediately turned the ball forward for the counterattack. And then in the final minute of stoppage time, he had a really good challenge. And I just thought, you know what? If this kid can just put on a little bit of bulk, not a lot, but a little bit of bulk, I think there's something to him there. Like, if he could get a little stronger, that could really help his case.
And I think he can because of his frame. He's a tall
kid.
Yes, so he will. I don't think there's any question.
It won't compromise him at all putting on the bulk. I think, like, you know, a player like Wanyama or even Dario when he was playing midfield got too bulky, so they were a little like...
I see what you're saying. Yeah, I think he's a Yaya Toure type build.
And I've seen a lot of that on Twitter, and a lot of people...
Sorry, Yaya Toure, I did too.
Slated for that, but I think it's
why.
I mean, it's early to tell, but I think it could be a very good comp
physically.
Sure.
Physically, I mean, he's right. Gonna be big. I mean, he's 19 and he's over 6 foot,
yeah,
right.
You can see
he's like a baby giraffe out there. He's got nothing but room to put muscle on. And his technique is good, and he's very composed, which is something you don't always see in that. Like, that's Brian Hill's problem sometimes. He doesn't have the composure, and Sarr does. And I actually think that he would be very helpful if he stayed. Like, if we don't get a Madison type, not that I would rather we do, but he was good in France as more of an attacking midfielder, and he struggled to adapt in the last season because they moved him back into more of a defensive role on a shit team. So, you know, he came on strong at the end of the season, once he kind of settled in, but he's more of an attacking midfielder coming up.
So. I do like to drop grenades every now and then, but I'm going to throw this grenade out here before we take a break. I do think that if he does stay with Spurs by the end of the season, he could be gaining more playing time than Pierre-Emile Højbjerg. But we're going to take a short break, and after we do, we're going to talk a little bit of more of Dustin's rumor roundups, as well as what we think Spurs' current best 11 is. And again, we'll do that right after this. Welcome back to Tottenham Hotspur. Continuing talking about the opening, still open transfer window. Let's kick it to our transfer guru in Dustin Ace Gentile. Dustin, what do you got for us as far as the rumor roundup?
Well, there is a lot. So we're going to try to go through pretty, there's a couple of names I want to talk about at length. And then we got some, I call it the lightning round. So you can cue those. You can cue that sound effect for me, Matt, for the lightning round, but we'll get into those kind of rapid fire. But I want to start with a little buy or sell here with some names, some information that's kind of popped up and it's kind of made me question. And I said, you know what? I think this will be a good place to chat. And then the rest of the stuff is kind of just information with, you know, we'll kind of just, you know, throw our bits and pieces in there and I'll try to get through it as quick as possible. So since we left off with the African Young Player of the Year, let's pick back up with him, with Poppy Modersar here. We know that his name popped up with Paratici in Italy. He was offered to on loan by AC Milan, and apparently he personally rejected the loan to AC Milan. So, Matt, you're going to buy or sell that Sar is loaned out this summer, or that is loaned out this season, or before the season starts?
I'm going to sell it right now, and I'm going to say if he is loaned, maybe January.
Scott, what about you?
I agree with that. I think that, especially the AC Milan, like if he's going to sit on the bench, he might as well sit on the bench and train with Conte. And I think he knows that. I think that shows some intelligence on his part. And I think that was a pretty well-sourced story. I think it was Longari. I really do believe that one. So that shows some awareness on his part.
I'm actually going to also come back in and say, unless AC want to buy Ndombele, then fuck, you have to force the loan.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I would sell it also. I bought the Harvey White loan at the beginning on the relaunch episode of Podspur because of one Poppy Modersar, and I'm staying with it. So I'm going to stick to my conventions. Now let's jump over to someone else we just talked about, the alien lover himself, Joe Rodon. It was reported on, today's the 24th, so that would have been 3 days ago. So that would have been, I'll say, Thursday, that he was offered to Roma along with 25 million and whatever denomination is the appropriate right there. We'll call it that. I think it's pounds for a swap deal with Niccolò Zaniolo. Zaniolo. Got to get my Italian right as one of the Italians on the show. But that was rejected. Sampdoria. I see out of the corner. I see a little hand signal there, Matt. Sampdoria also has acquired about his availability when they started talking about Brian Hill. Scott, we'll start with this one. Buy or sell Joe Rodon loans out to Italy?
I think it might be a permanent deal. Ooh. But at least a loan. But Jose, you know, the interesting thing with Jose, when he came in, he didn't talk shit about Rodon, but he wanted, you know, Skriniar, and we brought Rodon. He's like, I want this, and you buy me, you know, day old yogurt instead. But he's been a fan and he wants it to sign him. So I buy that the interest is genuine. And I do think he's going to go either alone or permanent, only because he doesn't fit into the Champions League squad because Swansea are not association in the association as far as the UEFA is concerned. So he doesn't fit in the squad right
Welsh.
Now.
He is Welsh. Yeah.
And they don't count that in the Champions League that they do in England. So,
Scott, I want you to hold on to the name Milan Skriniar for a minute, and we might cycle back to that one. Matt, buy or sell Joe Rodon to Italy?
I'm going to sell the way you initially said it, but agree with Scott and buy the interest. I think if he does go to Roma, actually, I'm going to split it. If he goes to Roma, it's part of a sale to fund Zaniolo. If he goes to Sampdoria, it's a loan because I don't think they can take on the wages necessary.
In U.S. dollars, Rodon is valued by Transfer Market at $8.8 million. Do we get higher or lower than that if we do sell him to Italy? Just one word answer, higher or lower?
Double.
Oh.
Higher.
You're talking dollars. I mean,
it all works out the same. I mean, I had to explain this to people online. There's a conversion rate. It all adds up the same. Just depends on what dollar amount, the, or
well, to the euro, it actually, we're not to get, it's not really political, but the dollar's worth more than the euro for the first time in a long time, but it is still inferior to the pound. So
I know the I know $1 US is 98 cents. You are, I think it's 98 cents when it comes to what we would call cents to the pound. And I know this isn't quite the same, but I know the euro, £1 is like exchange rate is like 1.18 euro.
So actually, I literally, my boss and I were just looking at this yesterday because we do business in Europe. It's a dollar was 0.98 euros is $1, and £1 is $1.27. So the pound, okay. The pound is this is getting way too into it here, but the pound is the strongest currency there is, and the, gotcha. And the dollar currently outweighs the euro for the first time ever.
I was getting my things backwards.
You were
backwards.
In the ball. Your numbers were right.
Yeah, the numbers. Yeah. Moneyball.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's all good. I'm not afraid to admit that I'm wrong because I'm wrong before, and I will be wrong again. I.e. Gleason Bremer. Anyways, another name I want to buy or sell with you guys real quick is Emerson Royal, someone we also talked about. The word The Athletic has used that I'm going to use is the word poised to leave this summer. Conte believes that Spurs have depth at right wing back with Spence, Doherty, Lucas, and even Dejan Kulusevski. And also today, Ali Gold reported that Emerson Royal has admirers in Spain. Buy or sell, Matt. Emerson Royal is out before September. I think deadline day is September 2nd.
I want to first address the fact that I never want to see Dejan Kulusevski play right wing back for Spurs. I just don't want to
agree. Agree 1,000%.
But I'm going to buy this. I could very much see him ending up at Atletico. I think playing for a defensive minded manager like Simeone, who plays pretty much a flat back four, could work very well for him. I still think there's a player there. I think we're giving up very early on him, but if we can at least, you know, break even or turn slight profit, knowing what we have or what we think we have with Spence, I think I'm okay with it.
Scott, buy or sell Emerson out before September 2nd.
Buy. I'll take him to the airport myself.
I'll buy it too. I just think it's interesting that Matt Doherty hasn't played, didn't play. It was the only player that didn't play. And yet, we're not talking – like, I didn't see really much about him popping up anything concrete that he was going anywhere. Well, I just find that a little odd.
I do want to clarify, Matt. I do agree with you. I think he is a good right back. It is just so constrictive to the way that Conte wants to play. It's right. Offensive to me that he still plays so much. Like, it's literally like playing with 9 outfield players in attack.
Says the man who, you know, was quoted earlier on in the show by saying it was like Emerson had COVID and nobody wanted to get near him.
Right. Exactly.
That's it. It explains it.
And the last buy or sell here is a name that we have not mentioned on the show, but is Nikola Zalewski from Roma. He has been linked. If you've read a lot about the moves about the potential move for Nicolò Zaniolo. Zaniolo, I'm going to get it wrong again. That's the Southern come out in me. Like I said, my mom's from small town Kentucky. His name has popped up, and the adjective for this one is Conte is quote-unquote crazy, according to Calcio Mercato, about Zalewski. I don't have a – oh, yeah, I do. The number for Zalewski is – and this is an American just because that's what my transfer market is set to. It's 13.2 million US. That's his market value according to that. He's 20 years old. A couple of quick things I'll say about him is he was a couple like Calgary and a couple other places were interested in him last year, and Roma said no. PSG was one of the teams that was interested in him, and they've kind of not really accepted it. I mean, let's just do this easy by ourselves. He could play left wing back. That's what he played for under Mourinho last year. Do we bring in but he's also linked at Cam. Do we bring in another left wing back or Cam buy or sell? I think, are we all sell on this one?
I'll start off. I'm going to sell it. I didn't even, you know, I hadn't heard this one until you brought this up, Dustin. And
Trust Calcio Mercato. That's the only reason I brought it.
Oh, right. He's a Polish international. I just think that with Cesc, you know, with Perisic, at that left-sided wing back with Sonny up top, or Charleston can also play on the left. I just think it's a sell just due to excess parts.
What about you, Scott?
I don't know a lot about him. I mean, you look at his stuff on FBref, and what's odd to me is we're looking at him as potentially an inverted left wing back. But I say that like we're not looking at Zaniolo to potentially play right wing back, who's left footed. So I and technically Perisic is right footed playing left wing back. So I guess there's something to that. I mean, he's one of those players, like he could come to England and you never see him because he just flops so hard, or he could turn into Gareth Bale. I mean, you just don't know. You haven't seen enough of him. He's talented. He's fast. He's a good dribbler. But who the hell knows? I have no idea.
That's why I sell it. I honestly think this is a name that I wouldn't be surprised if nothing happens this summer for him, but then pops back up next year. I think he's a name that might just keep popping up for him because I feel like Conte loves his Italians as much as Will Ferrell in Kicking and Screaming loves his Italians. Before I get into a couple of discussions here, I want to hit – this is where Matt has queued up the lightning round in here. So there's the sound effect. There's no new updates on Harry Winks or Memphis Depay or Lucas Paqueta or Pau Torres or Oscar Glauc. All that stuff is still the same. There's really no new news on James Maddison, only that we might have to sell a couple people, but there's no doubt, like there's little doubt that he's going to want to come to Spurs and Spurs want him. Do we really need to say anything else about James Maddison? I know we all definitely think he would benefit the team. He's English.
I actually read a really interesting tweet earlier this week, and the more I soaked it in, the more I tend to agree with it. If we buy Zaniolo, I think it guarantees.
You retweeted this.
I saw that.
And if we buy James Maddison, I think it seals top two. And I found that very interesting, and I apologize for not having the source right in front of me and giving that person credit. But
they know who they are.
I tend to agree with it. I actually like that take a lot.
Yeah, when I first heard the James Maddison stuff, I was like, I don't know. And I think the more I've kind of digested it and processed it, I think I'm going to do it. So I want to have a big discussion about some center back stuff. But let's also talk about, speaking of a center back, let's also talk about Joff Tanganga. AC Milan, apparently the deal is close. Like they think it's very high rate of success. The final marketing thing is both teams want them. They're cool with a year loan. Now we're getting down to the nitty gritty. Spurs want the obligation to buy. AC Milan wants the option to buy. They're cool with the 17 million price tag on that. And that's in pounds. But also Spurs are talking about having a buyback clause on that. Do you guys think it's weird to have the obligation to buy, but also we want the buyback option?
I think it's a good idea. It's kind of like...
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if anybody is a big gambler here, but it's like taking the four-way teaser on one game. You know, it's like, I might be getting too into the gambling thing.
No, keep going. People understand.
With a teaser, you basically, they give you extra points on it. Like a 7-point spread, you tease it at 6 points, you get it out to 13. It kind of gives you a window. Like if this team wins by 7 or loses by less than 6, you get your money. So it's like, okay, if he's dog shit, they had to buy him. If he turns out to be good and he hits the ceiling, you get a discount to get him back. So it kind of, it's a floor ceiling game. And it sounds like something Paratici would do. You know, he's very intricate in a lot of these things. So it makes sense. I actually heard that we might be getting cold feet on it and want to keep him. So that would be interesting.
Interesting. Matt, what do you think? I mean, I know we're all pro Joff Tanganga, but
yeah, I do like what Scott says, and I could definitely buy that. And you know, I would love to see him. I would actually like to see him. Prefer to see him play in England, but you know, apparently that interest has cooled a bit. But you know, like Scott said, you have that option of getting him back, and I think you have to have the buyback clause just because he's homegrown. And I think, like we talked about last week, I think he outlasts Antonio Conte's managerial.
That's what I was thinking too. Like, what?
And that couldn't be too much of a buyback clause if you're selling him for 18. I mean, what is it? It can't be much more than that at the most.
Yeah,
probably 30.
Maybe around, I would say double, 35, yeah. 36, right?
Right.
I haven't any information about what that buyback clause, what the amount would be, but I would say the words double were about to come out of my mouth before Matt said it. So I'm with him on that. Matt, I think this is the one that's going to make you, you've called me Lord Varys before. So I'm going to give you one that I think that's going to make you chuckle and end up with my face on a really awkwardly done Photoshop. So Sergio Reguilon, lots of stuff about him. Sevilla seems like his landing spot. Barca is interested in him on loan only if they can't re-sign Marcos Alonso. But here's the particularly delicious rumor that I heard, and it's from Mundo Deportivo, which is if you look on the source charts, a tier two. So it's not like it's still decently believable. According to his quote unquote inner circle, Sergio Reguilon has told them he's going to be back in Sevilla soon. Matt, I figure like you, the fact that I've just mentioned no report from his inner circle would make you so happy for me.
That makes me giggle, but it also makes me excited because if you follow him at all on Instagram, you've seen Marta Diaz, his significant other, who, if you're not following, is worth a follow. So I guess just thinking about Marta makes it okay for me there. But yeah, I can see that happen now. I'm cool with that. I hope it's a straight sale.
Go ahead, Scott.
Sorry, I think Barca or Chelsea are going to buy Jules Koundé, and then I think that's the linchpin the there. Yeah,
Maybe we can get Marta in the U.S. Can we get Marta in the U.S.?
Steal your thunder there, Dustin.
No, you didn't. That's exactly what I was about to say, and I love it. Oh, I knew that's.
Yeah,
I'm glad. I'm perfectly cool when you guys know the same stuff I do. It makes my job a lot easier.
Well, it's the continent's poor. We talked about that. So it's of course waiting on the domino to come from either England through Chelsea or one of Barcelona's levers, financial levers, to allow them to spend more money. Apparently, Xavi has called him and said, "This is what we're going to do. Please wait. Please wait for me." And just like every other idiot player in the world, they wait for Barcelona like they're not going to call him in 12 months and ask him to cut his pay in half. So whatever. Just sell him so we can get Reguilon off the books.
Yeah, that's a good shot. Scott, if you were one of my stat students, the way you jumped in there, I would have shed a tear in class because it'd have been great. There she is. I just looked at him. I was like, where'd Matt go?
It's okay. Matt, you could bring her back.
All right, last little bit that's a discussion, and I'm going to hit you with some hit you with some lightning round. Matt, there's a tweet floating around there with Brian Hill's girlfriend in there too. I'm surprised you haven't talked about that one yet.
Isn't he like 12?
Or he's a member of the Beatles, one of the two. The last thing that I think is particularly juicy to talk about is the main center back discussion here. We know that Alessandro Bastoni, you know, let's start with this. We know Inter Milan right now is in a screwy position financially. Their deal for Milan Skriniar is falling apart with PSG, and their owner's been sued by, is it from Hong Kong? I don't want to say the wrong. Is it Hong Kong? Is that right? Who he got sued by? 250 million pounds is what
euros.
The lawsuit. Euros. Yeah, sorry, euros. So it sounds like PSG and, like I said, Gleason Bremer has now sided with Juventus, which was their main target if they were going to try to sell Milan Skriniar. So they're in a bad way. But according to – I don't have the source right here, but earlier today and even last night I saw this, Milan Skriniar apparently has had the interest of Spurs back again.
Ooh. So what's interesting is Inter with this ruling, they basically are forced to generate a net positive of 60 million euros this window. There's no option. There's no choice. They have to generate a positive.
Is that an FFP thing?
Yeah. Yeah, because so their owner Zhang and
FFP.
Well, it matters with Plum. So it goes back to when China was funding a lot of their money into the elite football. You know, there was like 2 years where they were buying all kinds of players and the government stepped in and said, you can't do this anymore. That's kind of where that got implicated with Inter, because it was where the funds were being generated from. So there is no choice for them now. It honestly, it's kind of like the Leicester thing with Madison. I not to sidetrack us, but their
No, that's perfect. Go ahead.
Their wage to turnover, their wage turnover ratio is out of control at Leicester, and the fact that they're not in Europe this season is going to cost them 40-50 million pounds. They have to sell someone. Same thing with Inter. There's going to have to be a sale. They don't want to sell Bastoni. They don't want to sell, you know, their Barella. They don't want to sell, just like Leicester don't want to sell Madison or Harvey Barnes. But, you know, if you come into the window and it's like, okay, well, you're going to get docked 15 points, or I don't know what the penalty would be. They're going to have to do something. Now, I don't know that Skriniar is the one that happens. I think that's probably what Inter would prefer. But I still think there's a part of me late in the window where we're, you know, Pratt, that she's outside with the boombox on his shoulder and a bag of money in the rain in Milan, like just waiting for Zhang to stick his head out the window, like Bastoni on a poster, question mark. Like, if who are they going to – Lautaro Martinez is not going to leave. He's Lukaku's best friend. And there's no links for Martinez to go. Skriniar, nobody seems to be interested in, because PSG have already – if PSG are balking at your price, I mean, you got a problem. Like, you got an issue. So I think there's still a chance there. I think if we buy one of them, I still think it's Bastoni. But Skriniar is a good player. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's very good. Yeah, I just don't know that we have the need for him now that we have Romero, like we do have the need for Bastoni or somebody on the left.
Matt, what's your whole take on Skriniar, Bastoni?
Skriniar is a brick shit house, and I don't think he'd fit our system as well as Bastoni would, quite frankly. And of course Milan want to move Skriniar because his fucking wages are astronomical. But I do think that they want those wages off the books. But like Scott said, boombox above my head, Bastoni. I still think he's coming in by the end of the window.
I do too. I think it's Bastoni is the thing. All right, I promised a lightning round, so let's hit some of this lightning round stuff. Start with Harry Kane. He's not going anywhere, people. Don't worry about it. Don't care what Bayern says. Harry Kane's not going anywhere. Although another interesting one, Christian Romero. I thought it was weird that, you know, we had the obligation to buy. We haven't said anything about it. It came out today that Romero is still technically on loan. And when that becomes a permanent, he's considered our player because we've met all the obligations. August 6th is when we bought him last year. So I'm expecting that. I wouldn't be surprised that on match day, if we announce that Romero's official is 100% officially.
Where did that
player.
Come from? That he's still. I didn't.
Oh,
that.
I don't have it written down. It was a couple of. But it was linked from Last Word on Spurs. So, yeah.
I saw somebody say that it got done this week and it would be announced soon.
Okay, maybe that
but
is. The case.
But this wasn't like super well sourced. I mean, I'm choosing to trust someone that I might not should trust. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, if you said August 6th, we're looking at like a 2-week window anyway. Yeah, so not far off it.
Yeah. There's, like I say, I just mentioned that because that's an interesting thing. I hadn't even thought about it. And I was like, yeah, we haven't really like ever announced that he's permanent. But then I saw that and I was like, okay, that's pretty interesting. A couple of like quick ones of potential people who are going out on loan. Troy Parrott has had a lot of loan interest. From the championship sides, the names I'm seeing are QPR, Sunderland, Middlesbrough, Preston North End, and Swansea are all interested in signing him to a season-long loan. But before that, Spurs want to sign him to a longer-term deal, or just a new contract. His contract's about to expire. So I find that interesting that that's going to be a sign it and say, hey, get on out there and do something in the championship.
I found it interesting in a positive way that at least someone new seemingly is running his social media, and he was out like talking with kids and stuff while they were on tour. So hopefully it's a step in the right direction for Parrott. I think there is talent there. I don't think he's this generational talent that people have thought he is, but you know, to be a serviceable second striker in the Premier League, why not?
Play two at the top with him and Dane Scarlett. Sounds like not a terrible idea.
I think we're quite a ways away from that.
I do too. It's just fun to dream sometimes. Harvey White is another name that's potentially that is looking to go on loan this year. Swansea, Hull City, Luton Town, and Sunderland are all interested in the 20-year-old center midfielder, according to Pete O'Rourke, which is a tier one source. So I was like, that's a pretty good shout right there. Harvey White, I believe in Korea, he had some really nice moments. He had a really nice, like I remember typing, I've deleted it from my notes, but I remember he had a really nice challenge, like hustled to make a challenge to stop an attack on one end. And then within a couple of minutes, we were on the counterattack, and he was up in the other. He was a nice box-to-box kind of thing. And I was like, there we go. That's what we want to see out of Harvey White. That's, like, for me, watching preseason friendlies, that's one of the things I look for. Some of those young guys who are going to say, I'm going to go full bore to see if I can get noticed, which – so I appreciate that. A couple other quick names to talk about. Giovanni Lo Celso. He is – I just overscrolled him. Here he is. It's looking like him and Fiorentina are about as of Tuesday of last week. Fiorentina, they were about $5 million apart. Spurs went at least $20 million. It was reported Thursday that Fiorentina is looking at a loan with a $15 million option to buy. Do you guys think what do you guys think about that price tag for GLC to Fiorentina?
Don't care. Get it done.
I think we all know that was going to be a financial hit.
Yeah.
But I wish him all the best. I still think that there is a player there. I think he's a La Liga or Serie A player at best. So wish him all the best.
It's one of the, like, it's not worth dragging it out. You know, if Daddy Joe Lewis wants to throw us $150 million, let's fucking use it. Move on.
Yeah. Also, fun news, Matt, speaking of somebody we've talked about a lot and we're all just ready to go, Tanguy de Turkey has popped back up with Galatasaray. Matt's
lost in the IG sauce right now.
Scott, do you think Tanguy de Turkey makes sense to you?
I think it does. I don't know if he'll go there. I think he's got a higher opinion of himself than anybody else in the continent does.
Yeah. He's also been linked with AC Milan about a loan with a potential to buy. And also Marseille has come out and made it known that they really want Tanguy and Ndombele. They just ain't got no money. So can't do much with that.
Milan would make a whole lot of sense, I think, if the rest of their midfield targets fall through.
Yeah. Matt, I think we've talked about it before, but like Tanguy to Italy makes, you know, from a playing style, makes sense.
I think so. I agree with that.
Let's see. Who else we got here on tap? Brian Hill. We talked about him earlier. Apparently, a deal with Sampdoria was for $2.5 million for a loan, and they balked at it, but now they're ready to make a potential secondary, like they want to kind of see it again. Today, Ali Gold also mentioned that Brian Hill has quote-unquote admirers in both Spain and France. I'm just tired of hearing about Brian Hill to these countries that's not going to suit him. Like, at this point, I just feel like we're destined to see Brian Hill holding up somebody else's shirt and us saying, hey, we wish you the best in your future endeavors. Does it just seem like that to you guys?
Brian Hill is going to be one hell of a player for Barcelona or Real Madrid down the road. He's already in the Spanish national senior setup, so that's what I see for him.
I just go somewhere and perform and get us some money is what it feels like.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. And then the last one we'll talk about is Alan Saint-Maximin. Just because it was a name that popped up, but I'm here to give everybody some peace of mind. He's not coming. Chelsea's going to overpay for him.
Oh.
They've Chelsea's interested in him. Newcastle has given the line at £40 million on the price tag, and Spurs immediately said, "Nah, we're good, fam." So, I think Chelsea's going to make the reach out to him, potentially overspend.
Because I mean, Chelsea, you're getting caught up repeatedly in this Barcelona economic lever thing, like Conde, Rafinha, and so their transfer business, hilariously to me, is keeps getting held up by this stuff, and I would love that if that's who they end up going in for.
Because Alan Saint-Maximin is going to be the reason why in the regular season you don't lose to Arsenal 4-0. Gosh, they look so bad. I saw some of the highlights of that, and I was like, Chelsea looks rough.
Well, that's the reason you want to get your players in early, especially when they got torn apart like they did with some free transfers and you know, all the stuff that went down there. So
I could very much see Saint-Maximin going to Chelsea or, you know, whoever, and being Tanguy Ndombele 2.0, a good player on a poor side who's flashy and people like his Instagram highlights and just not panning out on a team that needs to win.
But hey, it's okay. They've got Kai Havertz to play up front, and apparently that's what Chelsea fans are banking on, because I have a friend who's a Chelsea fan who told me, oh, we're good. We got Kai Havertz playing up top. And yeah. I was like,
Timo offside Werner is not going to carry that team.
I don't see how they could sell Broja, and they don't have any strikers. Like, why would they do that? I don't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
It's interesting.
Thank you for the rumor roundup, Dustin. Before we do sign off, let's end on a quick, interesting topic and a question from our good friend in India, Ankit. And you can follow Ankit at @its_Ankit with 3 T's. Now, seeing that we've completed some transfers, we should talk about our first 11. Who are the proper ones and the proper fits as starters? So, Scott, I know we have the Roma match coming up, but if Sotan were tomorrow, who are you rolling out as your starting 11?
So Son, Kane, Kulusevski, obviously. And then in the midfield, I'm playing Bentancur and Bissouma. Assuming Bissouma recovers his fitness enough to be there, I think that's the best pairing, especially with Skip's foot injury, which we actually didn't talk about. We should probably touch on that right before we sign off after this topic. But so Bentancur and Bissouma, and then Perisic, Davies or Longley, depending on fitness. I know I keep naming multiple players, but if Davies, if he's fit, Longley, if he's not, Dyer, Romero, and Doherty, probably. I don't want Emerson playing against a pressing team because the donkey will come out. So,
all right. Dustin, are you still writing yours down? I saw you.
Nope, I'm done. Paper.
You good?
I'm good. So my front, to save us on time here, my front three is not any different. My midfield is not any different. My back three is not different in Davies, Dyer, and Romero, but my wing backs are different. I'm going to say we're going to start Sessegnon on the left, and I'm going to go ahead and pull the trigger here. I think we might give Jed Spence the start on the right. I think he's showed me some stuff, and I think he's going to get a little bit more playing time, a lot more of a look against Roma. I think we could see Jed Spence to start on the right, and then obviously we're going to have Hugo in the net, but that's my starting 11.
I pretty much fall right in line with Scott, except I am Sessegnon over Perisic right now, with Perisic just coming back from that injury. I also want to give you guys an interesting idea right now. So Conte at Inter Milan started a starting lineup of Handanovic in net, a back three of Bastoni, De Vrij, and Skriniar, a midfield rock of Brozovic, and then sitting just in front of him, a midfield four, call it, with wingbacks of Perisic, Christian Eriksen, Barella, Hakimi, and a front two of Lautaro and Lukaku. And I think very much that this 3-1-4-2 formation that Conte implemented at Inter Milan could very much make its way to Tottenham. I think right now, I think I could see Bentancur sitting behind that midfield line of, Bissouma and PEH. I still think it would be Son and Kane up top, but I could very well see that happen. I think that's an interesting take. I saw that formation out there about what a great team that was and a comment on it. And it was actually, I gave Andrew a shout out earlier, Andrew George, and he said, is this formation Conte's goal at Spurs? And I think it's a very interesting one and a very one to keep an eye on going forward, especially with links to a player like Madison, who could, I think, really open up that formation and make it look very well.
We have been talking a lot this summer within our group chats about the potential of the 3-5-2 or the 5-3, however you want to technically name it.
Right.
So I think it's if a Madison comes in, or Zaniolo comes in, because they're a similar type of player in that position, I think that the 3-5-2 could definitely be something we run.
Right. I think on the Spence thing, I think he could very well start, Dustin. I just encourage patience here. I mean, right. Conte has already made that clear that it was a club signing. I think he's like distancing himself, but you got to remember, he sat Hakimi down for several weeks to literally let him train on his own to learn how to play that position. Like, and that's Ashraf Hakimi. Like, I just he could very well start, or it could be 4 months before he's starting games for us. Right.
That's true.
I agree with you there, Scott. And I actually think the Conte, saying it was a club signing is very much a, deflection of expectation off the player, which, say Jose did not do for Ryan Sessegnon. I think it, I think it's a little bit of buffer for the player. You did mention the Oliver Skip foot injury. I know Aleister Gold tweeted out about it, and people were, oh, he's out for the season, blah, blah, blah. He had to re-clarify that he thinks it's only one game. You know, he had a pelvic injury, but he played every minute of the championship for Norwich, which is a longer season, more games, and they ended up winning it, so they went all the way. So he did have a lot of miles on that season, so I think people were kind of freaking out about Skip being the next Ledley King, and I think that is a very fast, premature, and not a great take. So something to monitor.
It does make me nervous. I would like to hear some clarification on, is it the same foot? Is it the same metatarsal? Then we might have a conversation. Right. Not Ledley King. I mean, that was cartilage thing. But if it's the other foot, or like he'll probably be fit for Southampton. So what are we even talking
Gold
about?
Gold seems to think he would not be available for Southampton. But he said we're looking at one match, not a series of matches. But obviously we'll keep an eye on that one. But
Speaking of Ledley King, I don't think I'll ever get a chance to plug this, so I'll give it a quick thing. In Peter Crouch's autobiography, How to Be a Footballer, he actually has a pretty interesting take that some of Spurs' training tactics actually might have caused the incessant injuries of Ledley King. And I'll just kind of leave it at that. If you haven't read that book, it's a really, really good read, and you can read it really quick. And Peter Crouch is freaking hysterical. So.
We'll leave. This will be my last thing for the pod. I know I keep talking too much. You guys heard the joke with Crouch. Somebody asked him what he would be if he wasn't a footballer.
I've heard this.
It's in his book.
Yeah. So it says, somebody says, so Peter, if you weren't a footballer, what would you be? And he says a virgin.
So Peter Crouch actually has an awesome football podcast out there too. So go check that out if you can. But that was Scott's last thoughts. Dustin, do you have anything else, or was yours the plug for the book?
Nah, it's. I mean, we could use plug for the book. If I opened the book and finished it, because I'm notorious for starting a book and not finishing it. But I'm just excited. It's another. You know, we're 2 weeks away from opening day. They call it opening day. I'm a baseball guy, so we'll call it opening day. We're 2 weeks away. I'm really excited. The team is coming together. There's still 6 weeks left in the transfer market, so I've got everyone's got six more weeks of me having a beautifully colored spreadsheet. But man, things just seem like they're coming together for Spurs, and it's really, really exciting, and I'm ready to enjoy some excitement.
Oh, absolutely. I think the most important thing is get through this Roma match without any injuries. That's my knock on wood. The depth is there, so hopefully, that keeps showing. We're able to get a good, rotation in of players, and very excited again to see that. See us take on Southampton. And again, if you're not already, go follow Marta Diaz on Instagram. If you heard guys laughing throughout the episode, that's why. So
that about, and also excited to see us play in Israel. I think with our ties to Spurs, with the ties with the community, I think it'd be a really cool, really cool thing to see.
And it's a chance to lift another preseason trophy
back to back.
That's it.
You'll never sing that.
That wraps things up for this episode. Thanks again for coming back home to Podsbury. We appreciate your support. Again, if you're not already, check out all of our accounts on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Follow all the guys and check out our blog and website at podsbury.com. Just a reminder, you can get a quick access to all of those links in one neat location by clicking the link tree in this episode description. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a rating and a review on whichever podcast platform that you listen to. 5 stars goes a long way to helping fellow Spurs supporters find Podspur. Thanks again for tuning in. I've been your host, Matt. For Scott and Dustin, notice I said Dustin and not Justin this time. I
appreciate you,
brother. Nail on the head. We'll see you next time, hopefully talking about another preseason trophy. And as always, come on, you Spurs.
Come on, you Spurs.